Well, it is, this is a Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning.
It's April 11th, and we're visiting. It's a bright sunny day, cool out there this morning.
It is, but it's gorgeous.
April 11th, 2012, and we're visiting with Helen Huber. Helen, how are you today?
I am fine today. I'm on vacation this week.
Oh, nice. Spring break time.
Spring break.
Huh? And you stayed around town, huh?
I am, yeah, you know.
Are you gardening or just relaxing?
Just relaxing, taking walks, you know, stuff that I can't do when I'm
working. Yeah,
you
let's
know,
get into
those
your working
hours
time.
Get kind of long sometimes. You
Helen
know.
Is at WHAS Radio, and as of today, 2012, you have the distinction of being probably the second longest employee at WHAS Radio.
I am. I have been there for 34 and a half years,
wow.
And I'm second only to Paul Rogers, who has been there a few years longer than me. When I first walked in the doors at WHAS, I never thought that I would hold this distinction.
Is that right?
I came from rock and roll radio.
Really?
I came from WKLO at the time.
That was a different atmosphere.
And I was almost in tears.
Really?
You know, going, oh my gosh, what have I done?
You really? Know? Because why? Because it was...
Well, at WKLO, obviously it was a, you know, music and all
lively.
Of that stuff, lively. And
it was a rock station.
It was a rock station, yeah. And it competed with Wacky, and they were always number one and number two, and this was before like FM hit big, you know.
Yeah.
And
so this was 1970.
It was 77 is when I started working in HAS, and when I was at KLO, we had already moved to a computer system for the job that I do, which is traffic.
Really? In 1977?
Yes, we were the first station that had gone on computer for traffic, and. When I came to WHAS, which was a bigger station and all of that, they were still doing everything by hand.
So you're going to the dark ages.
Oh, it was really, really the dark ages. They had IBM cards, and you had to put them in a typewriter and type all the information on them. Then you had to take a hand punch and punch out the respective columns. And then you had to take a needle, it was a long needle with a handle on it, and manually sort all of the cards, and then place those cards on a board and take them upstairs to the Xerox machine and photocopy them to get a log. And so I had stepped back about 20 years.
Wow. You know? Now, what made you decide to come to WHAS?
It was an interesting story.
Can you tell it?
Oh, yes. The manager at the time at WKLO, we had gone through, I can't exactly remember what had happened, but it was, we were really busy, and I had put in like a weekend of work trying to get things back together. And I just had made just a comment to him, not really expecting a whole lot, but I just said, you know, what would you do without me? And he said, well, we would manage. It just happened that within weeks after that, I was told of this job opening at WHAS, and I applied for it and got it.
Well, they obviously needed your skills more.
So. It did. And what was really funny, at that time, they also hired, there was two positions open at WHAS, and so they hired the other traffic manager from WKLO. She worked at our FM stations there. So in one day, they lost their entire department. And they didn't manage.
They didn't manage,
you know. And so at the time, the manager of the station wanted everyone to sign a non-compete. And they lost like 10 people because nobody wanted to sign the non-compete.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't know that they would do that for people who were not on the air.
Well, so. He just got mad that HAS took
he was trying to
took
manage.
Out his whole yeah took out his whole department, you know.
Well, now let's talk for just a minute. When we say traffic, in this day and age, somebody may not know that you're not directing cars. You're
no,
not
and I don't
the
fly the
reports.
Helicopter.
Tell us what traffic means.
Well, traffic is what I work with all the commercials, and at one time for every hour that you broadcast on the air, you have a legal document which shows where you run your commercials, where you run your PSAs, and it's what you bill off of.
The PSAs are
public service announcement. And so I would
put
all that together. And so, like, you know, if somebody buys a 60-second commercial three times a week, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., then I place that, I figure out where that goes and make sure everybody gets what they want and stuff, you know.
So you're not just then, you're not just putting it on a log so whoever's operating the on-air signal knows what comes when. This is for billing purposes.
Billing purposes,
and,
yeah.
Authenticating and everything.
Yes. We're kind of like at the bottom of a funnel, you know, because the sales go out, everything goes out, and it gets down to us, and we put it all together.
So a salesperson would go...
They go out, yeah, and they would say, you know, you're having this upcoming sale, let's run a schedule, and you know, it might be 20 commercials a week, or just depending on what they would buy, and we'll advertise for the sale. So they come in, and they have to get the copy, which they either buy 15s, 30s, or 60s, and the copy that would go for that spot, you know, whether they, in a spot is a commercial, and... they give that to us too, and so then we match up, you know, the commercial with the copy, and give it. The copy gets a number. The commercial has that number on the log, and so when it comes up, at one time everything was on carts. They look like old 8-tracks. Mm-hmm. Is what they look like, and the disc jockeys would actually have to manually pull all the carts and place them in the machines to fire.
Log. They would look at the log and know that between 7 and 8 in the morning, these are the commercials they're going to run at
right
times.
And they would pull them for an hour, and then they would just start manually loading them into the machine at each break. And a break would be after music or after talk or, you know, a break in the regular programming, and they would play the commercials. We're now all computerized. Mm-hmm. Everything is computerized. On air is computerized.
That make it a lot easier for you? Or?
It does sometimes. And until the computer goes down and everything, you know, it's manually scrambling. Yeah, you know. Yeah. And
well, that's a long cry from that first day you walked in there then. Walk us through some of the changes that went there.
Within editing a tape, you know, we were working with reel-to-reel tapes. Well, reel-to-reel tapes don't even exist anymore in the radio station. It's all digital, you know, and you would take a razor blade and scotch tape and cut it and tape it and let it go on, you know, and now it's all manually,
all
you know,
digital.
It's all done digitally, you know,
preparation of the logs? How's that changed from those days of putting those cards? How long did it take you to prepare a log when you first walked in there and you had to do those cards, the data punch and all that? How long did it take?
You know, you really couldn't work ahead. You know, you had to work day to day because you just couldn't get ahead. You know, there was no getting ahead. And
because of the time
factor. Well, it took so long And then on Fridays you have to do 3 logs, you know, and so
for the weekend
you have to do Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays. You're always working for the next day because by midnight you have to have your log done. And so now with the computer, you can work ahead because you get everything done for the next day, and then you can move on to the day after that and the day after that, or you can work out a month.
So it's just a matter of moving them around.
Right,
on the
computer. You know, and each, there's all sorts of different computerized traffic systems. The one
what do you use?
On, well, the one that I'm on, WHAS Radio is now owned by Clear Channel Media, and we have an in-house system. It's called Viero, and so it was created for all of the Clear Channel stations. And so,
oh, really?
Yes, and they can our corporate offices are in San Antonio, and they can get into our system and pull reports and all of that. And
they don't do billing and things like that. From
actually, now billing is done on it's called a hub system, where one city is marked the hub and cities around it are called spokes of the wheel, so the billing for Louisville is done in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and that's for several stations here in Louisville now, too, isn't it?
Yes.
All the Clear Channel
stations. We have 8 stations. We have, it's WHAS, WAMZ, WKRD, WKJK, WLGX, WQMF, WTFX, WNRW. Then we have digital stations for all of those, the HD stations.
Yes.
We have the Kentucky News Network, which is provides news services for small stations throughout the state. We have that. And then our Total Traffic Network. But right now it is
Total Traffic Network is actual traffic.
It's actual traffic. Cars it on does right. But it is being done out of Cincinnati at the present time.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you don't prepare logs for all those stations, do you?
I do for WHAS, WHAS Digital, HD, the streaming station. Mm-hmm. And I do WQMF streaming. I back up all of the stations. And I handle the University of Louisville and the University of Kentucky for football and basketball. Mm-hmm. They also run different things during the year. They have a show on WKRD called Cardinal Insider. I'm the point person for all of the copy and that for them, for U of L, for that. And I handle all of our networks, which is we might barter for a service, like a comedy service that one of our jocks might use on the air, and we get their comedy bits, and for that we agree to run like 60 seconds of commercials a day, Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. So they give us the commercials, they tell us what to run each day, and the copy, and we have that for all eight stations, multiples for all eight stations, and I take care of all of that. It's a far cry from just doing WHAS.
Has anybody told you lately they could manage without you?
No, I haven't heard those words for a while. But wow. Yet, you know, in this day and time, it's
you couldn't do everybody,
without the computer, you couldn't do it. But the business has changed so much.
Well, let's go back to when you started. When you came to WHAS, where were the studios then?
The studios were downtown at 6th and Chestnut.
6th and Chestnut, and the building there with television.
Right, we were on the ground floor and on the armory side of the building. Mm-hmm. The TV newsroom was, and our newsroom, radio newsroom, was on the 6th Street side of the building. Mm-hmm. And the TV business offices were on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
And
all of radio, they were on the first
floor.
We were all on the first floor.
Right. Mm-hmm. Our studios,
everything was on the first floor. Everything was right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was WHAS and WAMZ.
Now, Who was, for example, who was the station manager? Remember who the program director was or some of the people you worked
with? When I first came, the program director was Jerry David Malloy.
Mm-hmm.
The general manager was Mike Crusham.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I had worked with him at WKLO.
Sure.
So that
he was a sales guy.
Right, and that
was
part of the reason that I had a good reputation. So,
yeah.
The sales manager at the time
Jim
Topmiller, I think, was the national sales manager, and Kurt Smith was
Bob Shearer?
Bob Shearer was a salesperson at the time, and he then moved up to be, after a few interesting general managers.
Who was the general manager who came? Was that?
It was Mike Crusher.
Oh, Mike was the general manager.
He was the general manager, yeah. And then, I don't know the exact order, but we had one sales manager that came from Texas. And he would come out of his office screaming, I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
You know? he was very interesting.
Uh-huh.
He didn't last that long. You know, he didn't. During his tenure, WHAS lost the U of K contract.
Oh, yes.
Which was something that we had had forever. And so that was a black mark on his...
I remember those days. I would be on the air, and I didn't dare answer the phone lines that came in because you knew we were going to be abused. We just wouldn't take the phone.
I know. It was terrible, you know, and it was just, and they did it. I'm trying to think, was it the Final Four weekend was in Lexington? Was it the Final Four?
Mm-hmm.
And they waited until that Friday afternoon to let us know that we weren't getting it. I'll never forget that because we were in shock. Nobody had any idea.
Sure.
And it was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. But after 3 years, I think it was, we got them back.
Mm-hmm.
Because
So who became manager? Did Bob Scheer become manager after that, or who was Bob was there for a good while.
He was, and but in two we had Bill Campbell there, and he lasted a little bit. He was from Canada, and he was. I don't really know what to say about it. You know, some of them didn't make that much of an impression. Sure, you know. And then Bob finally took over, and Bob
had been there a long time.
He had. He had been a salesperson, and he moved up to general manager.
And did some good things.
He did do some good things.
Good. You know. Who were some of the people you worked with there in your office or around? Were you the only traffic person?
No. There were. When I started, there were three of us, and it was Ann Hubbs, who is still a dear friend of mine, and I'm trying to think. I don't even remember who the third person was at the time, because they weren't there that long.
Susan Schrader
was in billing. She was in the accounting.
Okay. I saw her around your office.
Yes, and they actually, she was up on the second floor, but at one point they did move the WHAS. I think it was because of the sale that they split us up.
When radio and television.
And when the Binghams sold to the companies. Mm-hmm. And then Susan, because she was radio accounting, she moved down to our area.
Okay.
Yeah, and so she was right there with us. And
what other program directors do you remember?
There was Denny Nugent. Mm-hmm. He was very good. And I think he is in Cleveland now, as a matter of fact.
He's in Chicago. Is he at Moody Radio? He's at Moody Radio in Chicago as of this date. He's been up there for several years now.
So you know better than I do. So Denny, and then there was, the brain just stopped.
Gary Bruce.
Yeah. And he was funny. I'll remember a story about him. Was they were doing construction out in front of our building on the street, and they had just poured a fresh layer of concrete right from the curb, the parking lane, if you will, right in front of our building on Chestnut. And Gary was coming back from something, lunch or something, he was late, and he rounded the bend on 6th Street because Chestnut was one way, and they had these cones up and stuff, but he didn't think they applied to him. And he ran through all of the concrete in his little sports car. And
oh, no.
He got it up. I mean, it was everywhere in his sports car. And so they had to haul it off, and he had to have it.
Oh, my God.
And then Terry Miners, who was on there in the afternoon, got he got a microphone and went outside to interview the work crew. And so it was pretty funny. We were laughing pretty hard about that.
You had some interesting people to work with. That's, you know, you were behind the scenes, but you were involved with a lot of things too.
Yeah,
Terry was one of the guys. Who else? You were there when Gary Burbank was.
Gary Burbank, yes. Gary Burbank was at WHAS at the time before he left for Cincinnati. And he was a character. I actually saw him a couple of years ago.
Is that right?
They had a reunion type of thing.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And he had come down from Cincinnati for that. Mm-hmm. And so that was nice. Also worked with Bill Cody, was there.
Oh, yes.
And he's still in Nashville now. And, of course, you know. I mean, we went to Ireland together.
We did.
And that was a wonderful trip.
It was a great time.
We had a good time on that. And I'm trying to think of Doug McKelvin.
Doug McKelvin, Wayne Perkey.
It was just a lot of good people.
Now, you had to have some kind of relationship, I guess, with the guys back in production. Were you involved with that at all?
Because
a commercial would have to get produced.
Right, we would have to make sure we had, like, if we were going to actually do it, voice it and all of that, then we have to make sure we have a script.
Mm-hmm.
And the script would mark whether you wanted, like, sound effects or just music or any of that. And, yes, that would go back into production.
So people like, was John Polk there?
John Polk was there, yeah. He was there for a long time. Yeah.
And then Scott Gettle, I guess. Scott was there for a long time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. You know, He's working in Elizabethtown now, I think. Really? Yeah, and John still has a studio in his home, mm-hmm. but he's still in the business too, you know. And but you know, at that time, and still now, you know, it's not so much like you would think we're departments separated from each other. Everybody works together.
Well, now you're not. You're not. Of course, you're not at Chestnut Stream. Or where
no, we're on Bishop's Lane off of Newburgh Road, and it's a building that Clear Channel owns, and so all of our Clear Channel stations are there. After the sale and deregulation, when a station could buy more than two stations, when a company could own more than two stations in a network, in a city, Clear Channel started buying up stations, and that's how we got QMF and TFX.
Oh, yeah,
And actually, WKJK is the same signal that WKLO used to be.
Is that 1080, right? 1080, uh-huh. Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
How about that? And, yeah, it's kind of funny.
Come back home.
I know, really.
They couldn't manage without
no,
you.
No, they can't, you know. And so... So we're out there, and you know, I miss being downtown because it was fun. You could walk to everything.
Across the street to Cupies.
Tell them about Cupies. Cupies was this little greasy spoon, and greasy was a good word for it. But they had the best hamburgers.
Yeah, they did. Very popular.
And it was very popular. It was on the corner of Armory and Chestnut Street. It was catty corner from our building. Mm-hmm. And they had a little bar, and but then they served breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so we would get breakfast and lunch and sometimes dinner.
Sure.
You know,
long hours.
They had
long
good
hours.
Grilled cheese sandwiches and soup, and you know.
And the AT&T people were across the street,
and they would go to it too.
Bell South, and I guess it was.
Yes, and the Courier Journal.
Yeah, they all came.
And Standard Gravure. Everybody.
A popular place. It's a parking lot now, I think.
It is a parking lot, and it belongs to WHAS, I think.
And I think every now and then they have to go in there and degrease the parking.
I know, because it seeps through the asphalt. You know.
Well, I want to come back in a minute and talk about what your day is like and how that's changed over the years, you know. But let's talk for a minute. We've talked about the change in ownership. When you first went there, the mm-hmm. Binghams owned the
Binghams
place,
owned
right?
it, yes.
Talk about that. Did you have any relationship with the Bingham family at all? What was the atmosphere like?
You know, they would, Barry Bingham Jr., he would come to the building sometimes, but they were all, his offices were down at the Courier.
At
6th and Broadway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had the whole block. The whole block. And
did you still have to go over there for your personnel stuff
when you first came, yes, you had to go down to the Courier. And actually, at the time, the Courier had a cafeteria up on, I think it was the 6th floor, maybe? It was
so.
The top floor, and we were allowed as a Bingham employee to go down there, and we could, you know,
they were good,
eat
very
their
good
cafeteria.
To their employees.
Yes, they very were. They were very good to their employees. And Eleanor Bingham Miller, she kind of worked a little bit in our building, but then she went off and did other things. But Barry was the main one. Mm-hmm. And he would come down some. And my impression of him was always a gentleman. I mean, he just was always... he was just always so nice and respectful, you know, and So
then the Binghams sold the station, radio and television divided that. It was about 1985, I think, wasn't it?
And Clear Channel bought radio. At the time, they had to split it up. They couldn't sell it all to the same
radio
company.
Radio and TV, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So TV went to, was it the Providence Group?
I think that's right.
Out of Providence, Rhode Island. And radio went to Clear Channel Communications.
Now, what was that transition like?
It was hard because we had to go through the building, and everything in the building had to be marked radio or TV. Because even as far as a dolly that we use to carry paper,
really?
it still has radio traffic painted down the side of it because I still use it.
Got one of those punch cards, but you've still got
I still got the dolly. You know, I'm still hauling paper. And so everything had to be split up. But at the time, the employees, we were all still considered ourselves a family because we had been together for so long.
Still in the same building.
And we did things together, and you know, everything was really good. But then, as their management changed, ours stayed the same at that time.
And
television's management changed. And the things just started changing.
Yeah, they were moved. They were sold a couple of times.
Yes, they've been sold a couple of times. We're still on Clear Channel.
But although Clear Channel has changed since that time,
yes.
too. As I recall, when they bought WHAS, they had just a handful of radio stations.
They did.
WHAS was a pretty important cog in their
world. We were like they owned WOAI in San Antonio, mm-hmm. and at that time that was their big station, and it. WHAS, we're owned by Clear Channel, but we are a Clear Channel station, which means like we were one of the first 50 stations in the country that got a radio license, and we can broadcast at full frequency 24 hours a day, where other stations have to power down at sunset.
Mm-hmm. So that's what you mean by
Clear Channel. And so like at nighttime, you can hear our signal like all over mm-hmm. the United States.
Sure.
And farther, you know. And so WOAI was a Clear Channel station, too. And so when Clear Channel, the company, bought WHAS, the radio station, they ended up owning two Clear Channel
wow.
stations.
Mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
But we were more successful at the time. Mm-hmm. We were very community-oriented.
Yes, and they gave you pretty much a hands-off.
Yes, they did.
You run it, you're doing well, and keep at it.
They did. And, well, we had heard terrible, terrible horror stories about Clear Channel.
Really?
And so the employees put together a petition, and we petitioned Barry Bingham Sr. to please not sell us to Clear Channel.
Really?
And... Larry Mays, who was the owner, he and his sons.
From San Antonio.
From San Antonio. He flew into town to meet with a delegation of the employees to find out why we didn't want him to buy our station. And I always think maybe it's just my naivety, mm-hmm. but I think that helped us. Because he realized how serious we were, and he did leave us alone, and we were very successful, and we carried the company a couple of months, you know.
So
it was good.
Well, let's talk about the you talked about community oriented in those days, especially what types of things.
Well, crusade for one thing,
crusade
for sure.
Children.
I mean, obviously mm-hmm. it's still going on, but that it.
Crusade is a local charity that started in the 50s.
It was like 1953, mm-hmm, because yeah. I remember that because it was the year I was born, and I could always remember that. and it's still going on today. It's collected millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Now you participated in that over the years.
I did. I worked for the Crusade, volunteered for 30 years. And,
wow.
And then finally, I just had to stop. It was just... more than I could do.
A great time, though, wasn't it?
But it was. We would have, the Crusade weekend was a blast. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would have a good time. I remember one Crusade, they had originally started out, I think, at Memorial Auditorium, but by the time that I was there, they were, the broadcast, especially on Saturday night and Sunday, was, they had moved it to the TV station, so it was in our building.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would all volunteer for things, and I had worked myself into one job. I would take care, a handler, if you will, for the stars, you know, and just make sure that they got they knew where they were going, and if they needed anything, and make sure they got down to Studio A on time. And one year, it was, I had John Schneider, and it was the Dukes of Hazzard. It was pretty big deal, or it had just finished, and he was starting on a music career and stuff, and so he came to sing. Very nice man. But it was raining that night, and he came in the back door, and he had on a t-shirt and stuff, and he was carrying a shirt. And I introduced myself, and he handed me a shirt, and he said, "This got all wet and wrinkled. Will you have wardrobe iron it?"
Not knowing he was talking to
her. I know, and I'm like... sure, no problem, you know. And at the time, in our building, we had Louisville Productions, which actually did TV commercials and stuff. And so they had a big closet. It was a walk-in huge closet where they kept props and stuff. And so we got in there, and they had an iron and a towel. I found a towel, and I ran back to my desk, and I threw the towel on my desk, and I'm ironing his shirt, you know. But it's just what you did. You
now,
know?
If you'd known those days, you came over from WKLO. You had to have that old-fashioned computer and iron shirts.
And iron shirts. It was not in my job description, you know. And you know, we would do, I mean, all of that. It was so special to be a part of all of that. And it was exciting times. Okay. And but then another thing I think that I'll never, ever forget was in the 90s, 94.
94, we were talking about the snowstorm.
The snowstorm. Yes. When we got, what was it, 16 inches of snow dumped on us overnight, and the whole city had just shut down. I mean, it was just shut down. And I, my father instilled in me this incredibly work ethic, you know, and it was like, well, my job wasn't done for the next day. I had to get to work. So I lived in Crescent Hill. I still live in Crescent Hill. And so I walked from bus stop to bus stop, hoping to catch a bus. And of course, there were no buses running. So I ended up walking to work that morning. And then Anne, who worked with me, she also had this work ethic, and she ended up hitchhiking because there was a group of nurses and doctors that were going to one of the hospitals. So they picked her up and drove her in. So she and I were in for our side of the building. And then the news department, some of them had four-wheel vehicles, and so they were in over there. And we were about the only people for radio in the building. And that was the day that there was a young girl, she was maybe little, I can't remember, 5 or 6.
I think so, yes.
And she was waiting a kidney transplant. And that was the day that she got the call that they had a kidney for her.
And she
had to go then. And she couldn't get out.
Roads were shut down.
Everything
was shut down.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
And they had called WHAS radio. And anybody in the building then got involved in it because there was so few of us. So we managed to put the call out on the radio, and one of our news people with the four-wheel vehicle went out and picked up this young girl and her family. We managed to get a helicopter. I think it was from Jewish Hospital, but I'm not sure. They agreed to, if we could get the girl to Southeast Christian Church, which at the time was on Hikes Lane.
And had a huge parking lot.
And they had a huge parking lot. If we could get her there, they would fly their helicopter to that parking lot and fly her to the airport. And the people at the airport made sure that a plane was donated, and they made sure that the runway was cleared, that this plane could get off. We put the call out, volunteers, hundreds, a couple hundred people showed up at Southeast Christian Church because the parking lot had to be shoveled.
Wow.
And they shoveled the parking lot so the helicopter could land, and we got this child her kidney.
Wow.
I know. It was the power of radio.
That's community radio.
It chokes me up. Right. You know, still it chokes me up.
But that was, you're right, that was the power of radio.
It was. And it's what we did.
Like
radio. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that child's still alive.
How about that? You mentioned we went to Ireland one year. That was a great
time.
We
did. That was
several trips to Ireland.
Fun.
Through the radio station, broadcast from there, and it all.
And I'll never forget that trip because in Angela Fleming at the time, her name was Angela Ingram. Now she's with Clear Channel in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And she was the promotions person, and so she had to go because it was a trip that we broadcast for, and people actually bought tickets, and you and Lou.
And we took listeners with us.
Yes, to go. And Angela got to take somebody with her. And her mother didn't want to fly across the ocean. And her best friend didn't want to take off during basketball season for 10 days. So she asked me to go, and I went, yeah, I think I'll take a free trip to Ireland, you know. But also with the power of radio, it was St. Patrick's night, and it was a Saturday, because we had marched in the Dublin Parade that morning, and we had broadcast your show
right.
from Ireland that morning. Well, that night, we were at Peter's Pub. I'll never forget. And Angela and I were on a payphone in the back of the pub talking to the studio at the time to broadcast, you know, just to tell him what was going on, because we kept doing that, you know, keep updating people all day long what was going on. At the same time, it was during the NCAA tournament, and U of L was out in Utah, maybe Salt Lake
Probably
City
so.
In Utah, and Terry Miners was out there with them, and so he was on the phone too. And so we had a conversation going between Dublin, Ireland, and Utah, all on the air.
The magic of radio.
The magic of radio.
Yeah, it was a great time,
It was. We had a good time.
Goodness, goodness, goodness. Let's see. I was going to ask you, you mentioned the ball games. There are things, you know, you get the log all prepared, and there's, I'm sure, every now and then a monkey wrench thrown into that. A ball game gets scheduled that wasn't scheduled, or something happens. What do you do then? You've got the log prepared 3 days in advance, and then U of L wins their game, or UK wins their game, and it gets rescheduled.
Happens? Well, that happened quite a few times this past season, you know.
Yes.
Well, usually that happens during like the NCAA tournament or any tournament where it's an elimination tournament, where if they lose, they're done, you know. And what you have to do is just guess and figure out what they're going to do. And if you guess wrong, then you have to scramble to redo it, you know, like you either put a game in or take a game out. And
is it easier? I'm sure it's easier today because of the computer than it was.
It is. You know, sometimes it's easier to drop a game in than it is to take a game out, you know, out of regular programming.
Because that means rearranging all the commercials,
everything. You know, as it stands now, we used to sell all the commercials for U of L and U of K, and now they have, let's see, U of L has Nelligan Sports.
Nelligan Sports. Mm-hmm.
And U of K has IMG. It used to be Host, now it's IMG. And they buy the whole, it's 6.5 hours for football, 4.5 hours for basketball. And they buy that block of time for us, and then they tell us what commercials they're going to run, and they supply us with the copy.
Okay.
And but it's their time.
Does
it's
it make it easier
time.
For you? Or
it's still the same, because I still have to schedule all the commercials, and it's just comes from somebody else.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of have to punt. And like this past season, well, you know, the U of L U of K game on Saturday, we knew we were going to have a game on Monday night, but which one?
And also, it's a little complicated because you're doing it for
both schools.
Both schools and different stations. I mean,
and what happens with what we do is U of K is considered our primary school. U of L is our secondary school. So if there's a conflict between the two schools, U of K goes on WHAS and U of L goes on WKRD.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we have to do. When they play each other, you can listen to the U of K broadcast on HAS and you listen to the U of L broadcast on KRD, you know, or if they're playing at the same time, or, you know. So you just have to kind of wing it.
Hmm. Wow.
Or just recently with all of the tornadoes, we immediately drop out of regular programming and go to just emergency programming.
So you have to make up those commercials people have bought that time.
And you have to, you know, some of them can't be made up if it's a special sale that is happening the next day.
But you have to keep track of all that.
Yes.
Wow.
You do that on the back end, after a few tears.
Well, what is your day like? What do you start your day? Have some long days, or is every day a long day for you?
Every day is usually kind of a long day. I mean, it's just we're all continually working on a deadline. That log has to be in there by midnight. There's no two ways about it.
So you have the same things you have to do with different ingredients.
Right.
Is that basically it?
It's like working a puzzle every day, you know.
Put it all together.
And put it all together, you know. And then you have to, you know, things happen. Like a client maybe is supposed to start on Tuesday, which it would be the next day, but they don't have their copy ready. And so you have to pull them all off and fill that with somebody else and try to take their commercials and move them to a different day.
And have the mechanics got any easier in the time you've been there, or is it still the same? I mean, mechanics, any different?
It's still, you know, with the computer,
helps,
yeah, it's not so much as all those cards.
The cards and having to have a paper log where people had to write on it.
And we still, like some of the rock stations that don't run any live commercials, they're totally digital now, as far as there is no paper log, because we have our traffic computer, and then we have an on-air computer, and they talk to each other. And so between the two, they have a file of exactly when everything ran. When you come up with live spots, because there is no audio on a live spot that goes in a computer, it comes up as an error because it's saying it did not play because there was no audio. So the stations that still, like WMZ, WHS, WKRD, WKJK, that still do live commercials and stuff, we do still have paper logs.
Oh, really?
Until they can figure out a way to timestamp them.
Really?
And then we can not have those.
Those, whoever is operating the control board, do they still have to keep that log in front of check off?
And they have to check off when a spot ran.
Wow.
And
I didn't realize
and
that.
Mainly it's the live ones that we worry about,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Or when, like say, go back to basketball, if a conflict is small, like say just an hour between U of K and U of L, we may join U of L in progress, in which case the main broadcast is on WKRD. We just pick up their feed and broadcast it over WHAS. Well, none of that shows up on the WHAS on-air computer because it's not playing it. It's, you know, so all of that has to be timed because we actually tell them that, yes, your commercial did run on both stations.
So you didn't think when you came there in 1977, first of all, that you'd be there all this time.
Never.
And that you'd have the experiences you've had.
Huh? Never. I never thought I would go from the sweet young thing to the grandmother. No. And I still, some of these new kids that come in, especially for the rock stations, you know, they look at me and they just see one thing, and I have to laugh at them and just go, you know, like, little boy, you have no idea.
And the first time you have to bail them out of something,
right,
they understand,
you know,
they
or when I come
that they
up,
couldn't manage without you.
Or I tell them, do you realize that I have worked in here for longer than you've been alive?
Well, think about that, though. That meant a lot of adaptability on your part.
It did,
You know, that's quite a tribute to last that long in a job because of the changes, and many people are resistant to change, as you've seen over the years.
You know?
And you've adapted to that, changed with that.
And I guess it is a skill, you know, but it's, you know, when I first started in radio way back when, it's kind of what you did. You know, you would go to work for a company and you would retire from that company. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the way it was. And that obviously has changed, you know.
Well, let's see. So if you started in 1977 and you were 5 years old, so are you, is retirement retirement in the future for you?
Not for a few years, unfortunately, you know. We have a 401k, so I have to wait, you know, for a while. But I actually started in radio when I was 18 years old.
Did you really?
In 1971 at WKLO.
I was a
baby.
How did that happen? I mean, were you attracted to radio, or this was just a job? Was your background?
Well,
did you come out of school or something?
I went to school with the general manager of WKLO at the time's daughter, and I worked that summer as a part-time person doing, it was called reach and frequency. It was statistics, how many times a commercial would reach individual people and the frequency which would they were heard. It was a formula, and they would calculate this out in for all of the salespeople whenever they would pitch something. And they would tell them about approximately how many people. It was all based on ratings like if you were a man 25 to 34, or, you know, and I, for the first summer, I did, that's what I did. And then I moved over into
Were you caught up in radio at all by then? Hey, this is
at that time, yes. It was,
this is a great place to work.
It was so much fun. Yeah. I mean, it was, and I just had no idea what I wanted to do when I grew up at the time.
Well, you're still growing
up. I still don't know. I also, it's like when I find out what I want to do. but great. It's, you know, it was a different environment. It never was stodgy. It never, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I still wear blue jeans to work.
Nice.
And you get used to that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like things have agreed with you all those years.
Then. Most, for the most part, yes, they have.
That's good. Well, you still got a smile on your face. You can still laugh, so that's good.
It's because I'm on vacation.
There are days I'm sure the laughter does not come easy. But
no, you know, it gets very frustrating sometimes, yeah. You know. And but on the whole, it's not bad. You know, mm-hmm. I've met a lot of people like you. Yeah, and I've had some experiences that I wouldn't have had anywhere else.
Sure.
And so it's been fun.
Very good, very good. Well, thank you. Anything else you want to add?
No, that's pretty good.
And now we know what a traffic manager and radio
station does. At least for now. Who knows when that's going to change, you know?
Very good. Well, thanks, Helen. Enjoy your vacation.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks.
Okay.